Now, stay tuned for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show right here on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome to this beautiful Tuesday afternoon in Sanity Cruz. Awesome place today. We're going to go for a nice walk after this show, and it's going to be a fun show. We've got it lined up for you, including a great interview looking at the history of the human brain, how our brain evolved. That'll be in the second hour with Brett Stetka, a new book on the history of the brain.
Yeah, we've got a lot of articles about the brain today.
We do, just to warm us up to why it's such a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And we got Bobby there.
Hey, Bobby. Yeah. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Great. Amazing weather today. I mean, just the beautiful sky, blue sky. Amazing.
Another sunny day in San Francisco, huh?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, it was like that today. We had a little fog yesterday, which was nice, you know.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Future and I have been preparing for the show. One of the things we've been watching this week is this new volcano that's been erupting in Iceland. There's a live feed on YouTube, which we now have on our links page, where you can watch it. Have you seen that, Bobby?
No, I haven't. Wow. I'm going to look that up right now.
Yeah, check out our links page.
It's absolutely breathtaking live webcam of volcano that has two active spouts coming and just boiling lava shooting out. It looks like a couple of volcanoes, you know, hugging each other.
A double ice cream cone.
And of course, they have, over the last 48 hours, we've watched the area around these two volcanoes just fill with lava and go from fiery to black to fiery again as they keep spewing more fresh lava on top.
It's got to be one of the more primordial experiences we can have, seeing the Earth itself manufacture Earth.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable.
So I guess we were really inspired last week by Jess Phoenix and her book on volcanoes. Now we're watching the live webcams.
It's very synchronistic. Yeah. Definitely worth work. It's kind of interesting because there's a lot of Icelanders now that are hiking around the area, and they run across the camera and they start doing little dances for
little
us.
Little web hams.
Yeah, web hams, yeah. See the Icelandic, what Icelandics do for fun in front of a camera.
I'm seeing it now. It's amazing. There's somebody dancing in front of
me. I told you. Until they discovered the camera.
There are two people now in front of the camera with their cell phone talking. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You see, this volcano appeared relatively close to civilization.
Yeah, it appears to be a popular hiking spot.
Okay. Is it Reykjavik? Near Reykjavik.
Reykjavik. Yeah.
So that's fun today. If you had a chance to go to our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Spectacular live volcanoes webcam. Yeah. Got a link for you.
I remember Dan Rather said about Iceland. He says he was walking down the streets of Reykjavik, and he says it looked like all the women belonged on the cover of Vogue. magazine. He says he never seen so many beautiful people in his life before.
They seem to like hiking. From what I can see, they're all dressed super warm. And even though the volcano lava itself is 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, I guess it's pretty cold in Iceland still, here in late March.
Yeah. So it looks dark now. It must be like it's
not quite Euro time. You know, a couple hours before, maybe 6 hours ahead of us. Mm. Yeah.
6 hours. Yeah. So, it's after sunset there.
Exactly. So that's in the news. In terms of spectacular explosions, it's a good start. The second big spectacular explosion.
Speaking of spectacular explosions,
was the new Starship 11.
Right.
Fantastically blew up.
Elon Musk keeps trying to get the Starship off the planet. And
yeah, that's
it keeps...
three in a row. Man.
Right.
Did you hear about that? That was over Texas.
That was just this morning.
Yeah.
Oh.
SpaceX hoped to conduct a test flight after changing out one of the craft's three Raptor engines, and they moved the test to yesterday. Monday. Then they had to move it to early this morning. And they had to wait for a government official.
FAA inspector.
Yeah, an FAA inspector. They've been under inspection since they jumped the gun on Starship 9 and went off without full government approval. So now they have to have an inspector on site. They can't just do it, you know, by cameras anymore with the FAA. So they did it, but it was foggy, and it went up 6 miles, 6.2 miles, soared up 10 kilometers before beginning the landing procedure. And at about 6 minutes into the flight, the cameras cut out.
That was it. It was all happening in a fog, so nobody knows exactly what happened.
And John Innsbrucker.
They're collecting data.
Exactly, yeah. John Innsbrucker, the launch commentator, said, looks like we've had another exciting test of Starship 11.
No need to Starship wait 11, for the return of the camera.
No need. Starship 11 is not coming back. Do not wait for the landing. Musk said something appeared to go wrong with one of the Raptor engines, the engine 2, but that may not be what caused it to crash. He says that looks like the engine 2 had issues on ascent and didn't reach operating chambered pressure during the landing burn, but in theory, he says it wasn't really needed. Something significant happened shortly after the landing burn start. Anyway, they're investigating the bits now. Mm-hmm. They'll see what happened.
Right. They have to figure out why things exploded. They'll know that once they put the jigsaw puzzle back together.
Yeah. Exploded in the fog this time. A very beautiful, foggy explosion. It dissipates the light in a beautiful kind of way.
Sort of like when we were watching the fireworks a couple years ago.
And firework in the fogs over.
It was all foggy and the fireworks went up and just basically lit the clouds and made them red.
Yeah, it's the famous San Francisco fireworks, you know, down by the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fog comes in, then you get this nice blurry effect. It's kind of nice.
Yes, colored fog.
Colored fog, exactly. All right, well, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. Bobby, Son, and Al, Dr. and Mrs. Future. We need a new name for you, too, Bobby.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Okay.
All right. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, and we have one name coming in for you, Bobby.
We're going to call
you
Science Wilder.
Science Wilder.
I'll take that.
Okay. All right. Today, you're Science Wilder.
Okay.
So what do you think of that Egyptian Suez Canal blockage, that giant container ship blocking it for nearly a week?
Yeah, they had to bring this super tug in from, where was it from? The Netherlands or something, but anyway, it was a gigantic tug, and they had to wait till it was full high tide, I guess. And
that was the key, the high tide that just came in.
Yeah, good thing they had a giant tide because of the full moon.
Well, they call it the worm moon.
The worm moon is this time of year because the worms appear after the melted snow.
But it's a king tide, too, so it was extra high.
Right. In Egypt, they call it the king tide. Pharaoh's tide.
So they had 13 tugs trying to pull this thing out of flotilla finally moved it. But boy, it just sure opens up a can of worms about how easy it is to disrupt global shipping.
Yeah. Well, sure. I imagine there are going to be some new rules.
Yeah.
From now on, no boats that are so big they can block the entire canal.
How big they can be?
Well, I don't know. Who regulates that stuff, right?
I'm sure there's regulation there.
But there's going to be more now.
Yeah, it's free floated 5 days. It could have been a lot worse. There are a number of ships that already started to go around the Cape, and they decided to...
Right, thank goodness it was only, about 10 days instead? I think it got stuck on the 23rd, and it got freed on the 29th. So,
but, hey, you know, they've got it going. That ship with some 18,000 containers, they don't have to move them one by one. 18,000 containers.
Can you imagine where all that stuff would disappear to?
That's a lot.
Take it off the boat.
Wow.
Not too many roads going out of the Nile.
Yeah, huge ship. And it's kind of interesting that how big that is versus how small this next story ship is.
Uh-huh.
It's a small spaceship that was just announced by Virgin Galactic.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Today, yeah. Richard Branson, Space Tourism, Virgin Galactic, unveiling a new space plane called the VSS Imagine today. It's a Spaceship 3 addition to the growing fleet of suborbital vehicles that they're putting out there. It's shiny. It's chrome-colored. It looks wonderful, and looks like you can see yourself in it, and it's so shiny. It's the current centerpiece of the company's effort to kickstart space tourism, which has been slowed down by this whole COVID pandemic. They're hoping that space tourism may get back to normal back in business for the first time in 2022. There's a great little video of the ship, and functionally it's the same as the last one, their Spaceship 2, which was called the VSS Unity. But the 3 is a modular design that allows a quicker turnaround for reflights. So you can pull a panel off and get to an area, and you might not have been able to get to in an easy fashion before with the Spaceship 2.
These wings look like they're ocean waves. The design is very unusual for a wing.
The way it bends down.
Yeah. Yeah. All these modern ships, they're all very silvery. They have their, like, stainless steel shine, you know?
Yeah.
They're very futuristic looking.
It's pretty. You'll want to spend $250,000 for 5 minutes
in space. For a window seat.
For a window seat. Yeah. Be one of the first citizen astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
It weighs less than the other ship. The interior cabin looks a little different. But generally, they're getting it down to where you have huge round windows where you can see out and you can float around inside and have the freedom to float a little bit.
Oh, that's the real draw of this kind of travel, is that novel experience of weightlessness.
Yeah. You want a direct experience. I mean, what's life but experiences? You want some good ones here. So that's been announced today. We have that coming out for us to play with in the very near future.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the news today was how Volkswagen accidentally leaked their new name for their U.S. operations involving electric vehicles.
What? Loose lips?
Yeah. You hear about that? It's called Volkswagen. Volkswagen.
No, with a T.
Yeah, V-O-L-T-S, Volkswagen. I wonder what direction they're heading in with their cars.
Electric or bust.
Yeah. The person familiar with the company's plans confirmed the authenticity to CNBC, so it looks like the company still wants to remain anonymous about it because these plans were not supposed to go public just yet.
Oh, this world. Privacy is dead. Forget it.
Well, they were hoping for a May release of the term Volkswagen.
But so they're close, a month away.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That could be a planned leak.
Yeah. They wanted to preserve, elements of Volkswagen's heritage and the sound of the name. So it's pretty good, don't you think?
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it, too. It looks great, too. What does it look like? It looks like a Volkswagen van that's been shrunk a little and a little...
The front funky. End still has no...
Yeah, the front.
You have no... You're almost on top of the road from the front, just like the old Volkswagen buses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything's in the rear, I would assume.
Sure. Yeah. And it's got that classic VW logo at the front in the nose of the car. The car looks like it's smiling from the front.
It does look like it's smiling, yeah.
Smiling car, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of these days we're going to be buying electric.
Yeah.
It's coming up fast as we have more choices.
Yeah, well, we still have to solve the battery issue.
Well, it's being solved. Lots of batteries are coming out right now. And
there's those liquid metal batteries. There's all kinds of stuff that's coming out.
Liquid metal, but just like Terminator 3.
There's a couple of articles in the Slate today about some very interesting graphene and solar design breakthroughs.
Absolutely. And new ways of dealing with all those water canals that could be using solar instead of diesel generators for moving California's waterways around.
I think that is one of the most interesting articles in the Slate today, is the idea of solar canals.
So
what does that mean?
Why don't you tell the public what that means? Where they floating the solar panels on the canals, water canals?
So the idea is to make better use of the water in California, yeah. which with all of our aqueducts and everything, we have thousands of miles of exposed water. And if that water was shaded, we would be able to save so much water that we would have clean, potable water for millions of people, right? Just by shading the aqueducts.
And the 4,000 miles of canals.
The canals, right. Mm-hmm. So if we start thinking about where the cost-benefit analysis makes sense to put some shade in on these canals, the shade structures could be used to get solar power. So while we're shading the canal, we're also harvesting the sunshine that used to be hitting the water and evaporating the water. So it's a win-win.
A lot of evaporation happens, huh?
Yes, yes. So.
Oh, yeah. Here they say 63 billion gallons of water evaporates annually. 63 yeah. billion gallons. That's comparable to the amount needed to irrigate 50,000 acres of farmland mm-hmm. or the residential water needs of 2 million people.
Yeah, so this is a very significant possibility that we could start looking into. And apparently there are places in the world where this kind of technology has been floated, where they're using barges to float solar panels and shade the water with something floating on the ground. So it's really just a matter of looking into opportunities to design some kind of solution that gets the best of both worlds.
Back of envelope calculation, let's see, it's about 13 gigawatts.
Yes, if we do all 4,000 miles. But we're not going to do all 4,000 miles, right? We're going to do it in small pieces.
Part of it. But that 13 gigawatts should go pretty far in
sure.
making it automated.
Yeah, it's viable. And then some of the other advantages that they are looking to accomplish with this solution is there's a lot of infrastructure maintenance when it comes to keeping the canals open and free of plants and debris and things that are growing in the sun.
Yeah.
And if we shade the canal, that will diminish the amount of things that are growing in it and causing blockages and the need to maintain it. So there's yet another reason to move forward
so it keeps
this,
it cleaner,
with this idea.
Keeps the water from having stuff growing
in
it.
Right.
So the picture I see, is that a real picture or is that a designer or artist's rendition of all those solar panels above the aqueduct?
Well, it's probably a real picture with the artist's rendition of the solar panels over the water. So it's probably a combination thereof. That gives you the idea. I think that's the thing.
It looks perfect.
Doesn't it? Well, then it's probably an artist realization of this. We have a caller?
We do. We do. Mm-hmm. Let's say hello to Amy in Felton. Hi, Amy.
Hey,
welcome
Amy.
To the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for your show today.
Thank you.
So just going back to the Volkswagen, I wanted to give credit where credit's due.
Yes.
Yesterday was the 79th. Birthday of my dad, Jerry Carter, mm-hmm. who passed, he passed away 7 years ago. But in 1978, he was teaching down in Southern California an alternative energies program and had written textbooks on all different types of alternative energy. And he had found an old scrapped VW fastback that he cut and modified out. He used to do custom cars for George Barris, too, but he modified this fastback Volkswagen to accommodate for the battery banks in the back. And
one of the first ones,
That's
huh?
so cool.
And had a custom license plate made for it that said Volkswagen, V-O-L-T-S. Wagon.
Oh,
and so,
great.
Jerry Carter? Is this your dad's name?
Jerry Carter. 1978, he was the first one to design a battery solar-powered. It was a solar-powered. There were solar panels on top of the battery banks in the back. So it was a solar-powered, battery-operated Volkswagen.
Too cool.
That's
well,
awesome.
Thank you for sharing that
Thank
with
you,
us.
Amy. Yeah. We've got to go to a break right now. That's excellent news.
Yeah, you might contact Volkswagen. Maybe they have a little reward for you.
Yeah, maybe they can do a little documentary on Jerry and, you know, the state of the art in 78. That was very advanced.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He was very advanced.
Oh, well, thanks for that.
Thanks.
You bet.
Be right back.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to the show. We have another caller, Mrs. Future.
Yes, let us say hello to Steve in Capitola. Hi, Steve.
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 Welcome. There is a liquid metal. It's called mercury. It's been around a long time in these toys.
Mercury, hold on. We're getting a little static
yes.
here.
Steve, I think you need to be a little further from the mic because you're a little muffled.
I just took it off speaker.
Oh, okay, thank you. Good. What a big improvement. Now we can understand you.
Yeah, I wanted to say something to Bobby because it kind of caught my attention when he was talking about the author that was in Scandinavia. And I was in French Quebec, and it was late spring, but it was still raining a lot. And I spent the first week there in the mall, kind of at the bookstores and the cafes and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Hanging out.
Montreal?
You know, the weather, yeah, right. But I was in Quebec City.
Oh.
But outside of Quebec City, there was a big mall, and it was a great place to hang out. And I couldn't believe it because every woman looked like a supermodel.
yeah, Quebecers are very fashion conscious compared to Americans, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, like, what makes beauty, because it's like, it's kind of proportions and how women carry themselves a lot, and there's that kind of style of carriage and movement and so forth.
Yeah, it's more also, Euro. It's more Euro sensibilities in many ways.
Mm. Yeah, and also it's super quiet, Dr. Future. Like, you're in this mall, and, you know, if you're in the Capitola Mall or somewhere, they're throwing, you know, people are throwing snow cones at each other and screaming and stuff. And
where do you take the kids for the afternoon?
But yeah, but like in Quebec, like it's like very quiet and dignified, and people are kind of just kind of floating along.
Did you find English things to read, or was it all French there?
The funny thing was, I took a little travel French class for eight weeks. It was a pretty good class. It was like an 8-week course with a lady, and I took that, and before I went, and I thought, oh, you know, I'll get there, and it'll be like, you know, it'll be like dinner French. It'll be like I'd be able to order off the menu or something. And I get to Quebec City, and everyone speaks French.
It's not like sort of speaks it.
And you walk up to a girl, looks like she's from Laguna Beach. You know, she has blonde hair, and she's, you know, like looks like a beach chick. And you say, can you tell me where I can get some live music? And they just like stare at you, like, you know.
In Montreal, it's gone through an evolution around French. Back in the 80s, they had an election to secede from Canada, right? The province of Quebec.
The referendum.
And since the referendum didn't go through, but they settled for the compromise of just French first. So in the early years, French was everywhere. People wanted you to speak French, and they wanted everything French to be bigger and first. And if you didn't speak French, then they just ignored you, right? And maybe it's still like that a little bit in Quebec City. But we go to Montreal quite often because Al's mom is from there and lives there.
Hi, Mom.
Right. And what I have found as someone who, I have high school French, but I've forgotten more than I remember. And now, if I try to speak French in Montreal and I'm struggling with it, they just don't want to hear it. They don't like to listen to bad French.
I would be careful about that because, you know, Quebec French is considered bad French by the Parisians.
Well, what I'm saying is that
Montreal
French would rather speak English than listen to my bad French to me.
When I was there last time, because the referendum had passed, and so they made all the schools, all the written material, all the signage, all the newspapers, magazines, et cetera, are in French.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty pushing to try to preserve their culture.
They should. So you had a question for Bobby about this?
I was just telling Bobby because I was saying all the supermodel capital of the world was like in French Quebec.
Sounds like we could have quite a contest there between Reykjavik and Montreal.
Well, you know, for a while they
and
banned
we'll
English.
And send some California girls too.
Yeah. All right, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Bye.
It's kind of funny because for a while they banned English, and then now I think it's English is allowed, but at one-third the font size. And, you know, you have French first, and you have little English right after that. It's better than being banned. And the accents are very different. You know, like in Paris, you'd say oui, you know, for yes.
Uh-huh.
Quebec, you'd say why. Why? Why? You know, they consider that very
provincial.
Sophisticated provincial, yeah, mm-hmm. I guess you could say.
Yes.
So anyway, back to the show here. Oh, yes, the flying taxi startup, Lilium. Goes public.
Okay, we're back to the Dr. Future links here. DrFutureShow.com.
We've been predicting this for a while, that flying autonomous taxis will become the new norm. Mm. And the latest VTOL company to go public, eVTOL they call it now, is Germany's Lilium.
Oh, this is another beautiful design. Really,
yeah,
an interesting
it?
Flying vehicle. It seems to have lots of ducted fans, right?
The main body looks almost like a teardrop.
Right.
Yeah, with the fans in the rear on a horizontal wing.
Yeah, and all of these new wings tilt up at the edge. That seems to be new design. I don't know why, but a lot of the vehicles in our slate today.
Yeah. It doesn't have a tail. You notice that this model doesn't
just a
have
rear, just a rear
a
wing.
A rudder.
Oh, I see.
So the edge of the wings kind of stabilize the main wing, yes.
Got it.
Two front stubby wings with, looks like ducted fans aligned along the top of the short stubby ones on both sides.
Right, okay. So apparently Lilium was acquired in a reverse merger by SPAC, and now it's publicly traded. Before it wasn't.
Founded by former General Motors executive Barry Engel.
Mm-hmm. And it will list on NASDAQ under the ticker symbol LILM. Lilium.
It's a 7-seat electric aircraft that will launch as part of an intercity flying taxi service in 2025.
That's going to be very
It's bigger.
Popular.
It used to be 5 seats. Now they've got it up to 7 seats.
Yeah, but there's no place to put your luggage.
2 seats, I guess, could be for luggage. It's the latest deal involving eVTOL.
This would be popular at airports, right? Because if you can do 175 miles an hour, you could get to your hotel in just minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think we have a local competitor in this market.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's Joby Aviation. And I believe they just put together a facility in the Seaside Airport. And I believe one of the first things they'll be doing is doing a service between airports, where you'll get to San Jose Airport easily from Monterey. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to take an e-taxi, get there in 10 minutes.
Yeah,
you know,
perfect.
Or if you have to go to San Francisco Airport or, you know, Oakland, just hop. All of them are within range of the little e-taxi. I think as long as you can get to your destination under 45 minutes, you won't run out of juice.
So apparently the Lilium company completed its first phase of testing of its little 5-seater, 36-rotor electric prototype in October of 2019, and it can go up to 100 kilometers per hour. And then they're planning to launch passenger operations in several locations around the world by 2025.
Right, that's the 2025. That's the big date.
The world goes electric in 2025.
Yeah.
Get your batteries. Get your solar chargers.
Your Volkswagen.
Get your Volkswagen. And get ready. We're going electric. Don't let the big power outage in Texas scare you. That was just mismanagement.
And don't worry, there'll still be room for fuels of all kinds.
Right. Hybrids. People think that solar is a competitor of coal or a competitor of natural gas or gas. All new systems are optimized for hybrid conditions. You need different things at different times. That's more the way nature works.
Gotcha. Okay, we got a caller?
We do. Mm-hmm. Colonel Terry.
Oh, I haven't heard from the Colonel for a while.
Sir, it has been forever.
Yeah. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonjour,
ça va?
Bonjour, très belle.
How are you? Are you faring well?
I hope you've been well, lady in charge there.
Oh, definitely. I've been in a complete bliss bubble that's going to last a decade or more.
Well, good. Please convey some of that to me. Okay. Thank you for that.
All right.
Have you had the shots, or what are you doing about it?
No. I am going to stand as a conscientious objector to the vaccine passport in favor of informed consent. And, you know, I'm one of these people who would rather use my own immune system than the one introduced by the vaccine to fight off the potential threat. Which
you are correct.
Yeah.
In some way. However, I finished a couple days ago my second Moderna shot, which required me to drive to Santa Clara. Happy to do so. And I researched the alternatives, including with friends who are virologists with PhDs and that kind of qualification. Mm-hmm. They're not nuts. And they felt the Moderna was the most likely to remain efficacious because of the two shots and the least disruptive to my body because it's RNA-focused instead of DNA-focused. Mm-hmm. Does that change your mind at all, lady?
Oh, well, you know, I'm all for people getting vaccinated. I mean, if I feel like a vaccine is better than my own system, I don't think I would hesitate to get one. But I just don't feel that in this case I need a vaccine. I think I'm immune because of my health practices and my beliefs and my just my desire to have the preservation of informed consent as part of our democracy. I really don't like the way that the marketing campaign to mandate Big Pharma's solution has been handled, and I don't want to support it. So.
All of those are valid concerns, smart lady. Mm-hmm. However, I think I wish you'd get a vaccine.
Why? What difference does it make to you?
Can you spell ivermectin?
Is you to the Chinese virus?
Say it again.
I don't want to lose you to the virus that is the product of Chinese communist germ warfare research.
Don't worry. You know, there are so many viable treatments. If I was even in any danger, I have plenty of available options. And I think that they're safer than the experimental treatments. Of
all those things that enhance your immune system, which you're probably doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Now, I called in response to the very interesting reference you guys made to the inventor of an alternative vehicle in 78.
Yes.
Jerry Carter?
Yes.
What was his name, please?
His name was Jerry Carter, and I guess his daughter called in to let us know about his exploits, and boy, I'm so glad she did.
Yes, I hope Jerry Carter's consciousness is having a pleasant continuity, and he can observe how right he was. It is so tragic. I was involved with Ralph Nader in the 70s in looking at alternative energies and the pollution from fossil fuels. Okay, I wasn't alone in that. And it is so tragic that there was no wisdom in the Congress to jettison, if you will, the corruption of the fossil fuel industry, namely big oil and big coal. We've ignored the fact that our overpopulated planet with our species is overpolluting it primarily by burning fossil fuels.
Hmm.
I call it fossil fuel consumpt polluting.
We're moving in the right direction. Colonel Terry, we have to go to our break.
All right, well then, I wanted to say that, okay, yes, let us get that done.
Okay. Well, we got other stories too here, so.
At any rate, no, it's an ethical thing.
Yeah.
It's a global ethical thing, and we must confront and break up the damn oil companies' control of our governments.
Oh, let's do Big Pharma first, though.
Well,
okay?
They're kind of
right
like
back.
Today's Big Oil. Okay, welcome back to the show. Yes, it is an end of an era with all that pollution that Colonel Terry was mentioning.
And yeah, the future is going to be nice, clean design, and we have to keep getting more and more alternatives because we're still very dependent on all that fossil fuel stuff. We need to clean it up better.
And it's not just that. I mean, our species has had a voracious appetite for everything on this planet. There's anyway, we'll talk about that in the next hour.
Yes, with our guest. But you do have a couple of links about that in your current slate.
I do.
About the other excesses of humanity, not just polluting beyond our comfort zone with our technology, but even before that, just hunting things to extinction.
Well, that's right. There's a new theory, and I think there's some merit to it, that our existence on this planet basically caused the extinction of thousands and thousands of other species because we hunted them out and ate them.
So smart that we keep destroying our nest.
And that's just the reality of it. But the thing is that we have this intelligence, we can do something really amazing with it now to give back to the planet that allowed us to get this far.
How are we going to do that?
Not soiling our nest, for starters,
mm-hmm.
and enhancing the immune system of the planet, not just of us, but of the entire ecosystem of our planet can be brought into a healthier state. And we're capable of doing that. And it's part of our gift as creatures that were given life here to do so to our mother. So many fundamental religions are about that alone, just the honoring and respect of Mother Earth. And I can't help but feel the importance of that.
Sure.
As we go forward and begin to figure out how to edit DNA and grow brains in petri dishes and all these sorts of things, if we're aware of the knowledge of the planet as we're doing this, we'll be better off.
Right. So instead of lamenting all of the harms that we've caused with our excess brain, we're going to visualize all of the stewardship that we can do with our inventions.
It's the least we can do. Balance it out.
We have quite a few more callers. Do you want to introduce anything
else?
Yeah,
because we won't be able to take too many callers until the later part of the second hour when we have our guests answering questions. So let's take our callers now.
All righty. Mm-hmm. We're going to say hello to Uncle Matty in Scotts Valley. Hi, Uncle Matty.
Hey, Uncle Matty.
Yeah. Hello, Futures. So appreciate your show. Always something new, fresh, and interesting. And hats off to Uncle Terry for setting off my curiosity alarm. I love the practical feedback that I get from your show. I want to know two or three things on the subject of inoculations for viruses, not so much this COVID. Is it my understanding that we're just immune to a virus routine like the flu vaccine for maybe 120 days, that's about it.
Bobby, do you want to take that?
Well, actually, you know, they're basing it on, there's another coronavirus, and it's SARS-CoV-1, which was in 2003. And those people that had gone through that virus, to this day, you know, 17 years later, they still have immunity. So it might be possible that if you did contract SARS-CoV-2, the one we have today, you could have, you know, long-term immunity. It could be possible. We just don't know. This is brand new, so it's never been discovered.
I didn't know if it was common knowledge that maybe it was just several months and then you're kind of back into exposure land again.
I've heard so many things that they have so many different theories about what's causing the problems of the disease and what the immunity is based on. I mean, there's just so many stories that are being floated and so little of it has substantial evidence.
Yeah, that's so true.
Right, right. Not a lot of it has traction and you always kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. Well, I had another question. Uncle Terry got me going on the alternate power. We have a growing dependency on using these disposable batteries. I particularly work in an environment where there are lots of batteries, and I do the right thing. I put them in the container, put them out on the recycling tote, and wait for the guys to haul them away. But are there much technologies in harvesting or repurposing anything that comes from the little D cell batteries, 9-volt batteries, and consumer batteries?
What do you know about that?
Well, no. I think most of the effort is toward lithium, you know, to recycle the lithium batteries because it's so expensive. But the ones that they have, the regular...
Old alkaline batteries?
Lead acid.
They
know,
have
if
some
you,
toxic stuff. Like
if you
want
to get rid of them here, you have to take them to the hazmat desk at the dump. You have to put them in a little collection, and they can catch fire. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong. You have to
I realize that, and I know you've got tons of callers online, but this gets back to wetting the nest. I did some research in college, when I was in college in the late 80s, on a local airfield that had a bunch of equipment that leaked into the water table. And, well, what do you know? The kids around started getting problems with their health, and we fouled up the water supply. And I'm wondering how quickly we're going to come aware of, oh, just put the batteries in the garbage can. That's not going to work.
Mm. Yeah, it's not going to work.
No,
but that's going to wreck our, you know.
The good news about alkaline batteries is that they contain manganese, steel, and zinc, which are naturally occurring metals that aren't really a threat to the environment, which is the good news about that. But they can be safely recycled if they're kept separate and they're given that status, you know, in your recycling to be, you know, be, as batteries.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So they know where what do to they do go? Where do they, how, if you give the hazmat guys a big 5-gallon bucket full of batteries you've saved for the past 3 years,
where do they go?
What do they do with them? Battery heaven?
Yeah, no, they have a recycling center specifically for batteries. Let me see if I can find out about the local one here. Battery heaven, right?
Yes. Well, what we need is somebody who's a specialist in bio-recycling or just the recycling after you turn it into the waste management people. How do they manage that waste? It's a great question, Uncle Manny, yeah. And I've wanted to know that myself.
Yeah, let's see what I can
find. But I don't know already, so we're going to find out. Yeah, exactly.
The mercury content.
Mrs. Future, I appreciate your perspective on the vaccine, but I am I'm married to a rather polarized person who is not interested in hearing about my conscientious objections.
Well, you know, everybody has to find their own center. I really feel, that the people who dedicate their lives to researching medicine and who are fording this frontier of what to do with the mRNA, they deserve credit for their dedication and their science. And the people who I am opposed to are the politicians who want to mandate this tax-based profit center for Big Pharma and take away our free speech and our freedom of choice and our right to have informed consent. And I just feel that the politics are very, very, very wrong. And we should be allowed to choose from an array of alternate treatments. We do not all need to be part of this grand experiment. So,
bravo. Yeah. Well said, and hats off to you guys. Thanks again. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Uncle Maddie. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Mm-hmm.
And we do have a number of callers. You want to squeeze somebody in the last couple minutes
let's
here? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, we got about, we're on the last minute, so you're going to be pretty much our last call, I think. What you got for us?
Well, you know, you guys, what are you going to do for energy if we go to war?
Let's avoid war.
Maybe we won't have enough energy to go to war.
Yeah, I'm gonna put all my energy into creative conflict resolution and win-win negotiations towards harmonic solutions.
Emotional literacy.
A planet that works for everyone.
Have you lost your mind?
When you
go to war, you need to go to war.
Oh, well, have fun.
I'll let you warmongers handle that one. That's not my area. Okay, we're going to be back.